The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good morning and happy Monday. Welcome to another edition of the Bastards of Boston podcast. We've got a lot to talk about with the past weekend series. A sweep it was. Red Sox took all three games against the Pittsburgh Pirates. We've got a lot to break down. Joining us tonight on the podcast is Charlie Smith out of Los Angeles, California. Charlie, how are you doing and where can the fans find you?
Fans can find me at Smith_MLB, dealing with a fun little sunburn, but it was totally worth it. Sox swept. It was great. No complaints. Really excited to get into this one this week.
Wonderful. Hopefully that sunburn subsides soon. Also on the podcast tonight out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina is Terry Cushman. Terry, where can the fans find you?
I can be found at Cushman MLB. The podcast account can be found at Bastards_Boston. I have a Facebook only baseball account, Terry Talks Sox. And since I got scolded by Lori, we do have an Instagram account, which just went over 1,000 followers, by the way. So that's a big milestone. And you can just search for Bastards of Boston on Instagram and that'll pop right up. Lori does a great job running it. So if she scolds me again for mentioning the scolding, I just wanted to, at least I said something nice in there, right?
A great job she does indeed. Taking a quick look at the standings, the Yankees are still in first place at 15-7, followed by the Orioles at 14-7. The Red Sox are in third place, 13-10, only 2.5 back, with the Blue Jays and the Rays rounding out the rest of the division. Gotta say, 23 games in, I don't think we all would have expected us to be here, especially with the injuries that we have faced yet. But while we're on good vibes, on a positive note, let's kick it over to Charlie. Charlie, who was your stud for the weekend?
So my stud for the weekend was Willy Abreu. Abreu absolutely torched the cover off the ball. 7-for-12, had multiple RBIs over the course of the series, had a big home run, 3 walks in the second game, so really good plate vision there. There was so much to, I think, go around. There was a lot of good things, but as far as players that went off, few did it better than Willier. So really loving what we're seeing from him. And, you know, because we're apparently giving all the younger guys a really good look because we didn't invest in premier talent, I'm happy to say that I'm really, really excited, over the moon, that some of those younger guys are really taking their chances and making the most of their opportunity. So, Abreu, stud.
Terry?
I think he should go by Willy Abreu. Just, it flows better. And something that flows really well with him is his swing. I meant to show it in the war room. He's got a very clean swing. And that's been basically on display throughout the series. We had him as in our bottom five previously on the midweek crew, just due to his defensive errors. But I'm really excited about Abreu, and he could be one of those out of nowhere. Well, not quite out of nowhere, because, I mean, he did come over in the Vasquez trade and, you know, there was a little bit of optimism, but he's a bona fide power guy. He is a strong dude in the batter's box and he's a home run threat. He can shoot the ball up the gap. And I really believe, even though there's been some blips with his defense, I think he's going to be at least an average defender and possibly an above average defender as things go on. I think he's most likely aware of his surroundings. We've got prospects coming. Roman Anthony is going to be here before long. Masataki Yoshida, perhaps he'll be the DH for the remaining 3 years beyond this, but he's not going anywhere by the looks of it. And Abreu he's kind of, as far as Boston goes, he's kind of playing for his career, and he seems like a guy that can handle it. And, you know, we talk about Devers always coming up clutch in the big moment. Casas had really, you know, since halfway through last year, you know, started also being that guy. And it looks to me like Breu could emerge as, you know, a 5 or 6 hole guy in the lineup. He's someone, other than Duran, he's like the next guy I want to see more of. And we'll see what happens with, you know, against lefty pitchers. But it was fun to watch all weekend, and he was by far the star of that series.
He absolutely had an incredible, sensational, sizzling weekend indeed. And, you know, he's got a little bit of crazy energy around him, and I like that in, you know, guys in our ball club, especially, you know, when things are going well, when he's in a groove, when he's got some momentum at the plate, you can just kind of see that he's a little bit more relaxed. His shoulders are down. He's a little bit more free swinging. And this was a guy that we had talked about, you know, we wanted to see a little bit more of, maybe wanted to see him in the field or in the lineup at least a little bit for his bat, because he was a guy that looked like he just needed some consistency, you know, just consistent playing time, whether it be at AAA or at the majors. You know, he was really struggling with the one day up, one day down, you know, maybe here a pinch hit or, you know, a defensive substitution. And speaking of him defensively, he's got an arm that'll play in right field at Fenway. He's made a couple of splashy defensive plays as well, you know, saved the game at the time against Cleveland. And, you know, he is a player that I think we could get really excited about. You know, he's a guy that, you know, maybe isn't going to be the splashy attraction that brings you to the Paul Bark, that 3 or 4 hitter, but a very solid lineup lengthening 5 or 6 hole hitter, as Terry mentioned. As we continue to get these extended looks at our, you know, 4A players, our prospects, he's one to definitely keep a note of, and, you know, see how he does in all sorts of situations, right? Righty, lefty, you know, specialists, bullpen arms, you know, whatever it ends up being. But this series, whenever, you know, the team needed to pick me up or a big hit or, you know, just to keep the lineup moving, he came through. And that was, you know, a sight for sore eyes, because it was definitely something that we haven't had for a couple of the other games. You know, this team has been so home run dependent for run production that if we can get a guy that bats anywhere close to 7 for 12, you know, I think we'll take that in spades. Charlie, anything else, or Terry, you guys wanted to mention?
Yeah, I probably should have looked this up before I gave my last take, but he's hitting currently .222 against lefties, and that's only in 9 at-bats. So he's 2 for 9 is how I should put it, with a walk. One of those 2 hits was a double. So I want to see a bigger sample size against lefties. You know, Devers, I do have his numbers up. Well, Devers is hitting just .214 against lefties. He's 3 for 14 overall. Where's Casas on that? Wow.
While you're looking at that,
Casas is 6 for 21. So I think what I'm getting at here is I think Abreu very likely could be an everyday guy, regardless of who's starting.
I think that's what you're going to begin to see with somebody like that too. I mean, the last series for him was a little bit rough against Cleveland. You know, we obviously lost 3 out of 4. He only had 1 hit in that game. So 1 for 12 in that game, but you're starting to see something that's kind of nice. The plate discipline is there. Yeah. The strikeouts are there, just like a couple other players that you have, but you're not seeing sombreros or golden sombreros on a regular basis. If he strikes out, he'll strike out once, maybe twice, and that's it. Like, you're not going to see an 0-for-4 night with 4 strikeouts out of him. And this is someone that was able to pop his batting average up from 188 all the way up to 280. So almost 100 average points increased in one series. Granted, when you go 7 for 12 in a series, you more than did your job. So the question is now, Is this going to be something that we're going to be able to see on a consistent basis? Is this something that you can build on? Or are we going to see some kind of regression and then you kind of go into like a 4-for-14 or 4-for-18 slump or something like that, whatever, in a series, and then it's just fluky appearances? Like, I would rather see a guy go 4-for-12 or 4-for-13 every series than, you know, 1-for-13 and then 6-for-12. I just rather see that level of consistency just for our team so that we know we have it in certain players. I don't know if we could point to 3 or 4 guys that we can say, oh yes, those 3 guys, they're going to be able to deliver series in and series out. If Willie or Abreu could do something like that, that would immediately put him into the next class of groups, because Abreu, honestly, I don't think he's on a major league roster on all 30 major league baseball teams, you know? So we're kind of reaping the benefits of somebody, you know, is him. And, you know, this is part of the 2-man deal that we made with Houston when we sent our catcher over, which I'm not gonna lie, when we got him and Valdez, I was nervous because I didn't know enough about these 2 cats. But, you know, it's been a little bit of time. We've seen the growth trending in the right direction. My hope, honest to God, my hope is that one of these 2 hits, and it looks like right now it's going to be Abreu. So I'm hoping that he can build on this.
One of those rare potential win-win type trades, right? You know, we gave Vasquez to Houston on a half season rental. We had the opportunity to potentially pick him back up. Obviously Minnesota threw a little bit more money towards Vasquez's way, and he's got to do what he's got to do. But you know, we were able to pick up a couple of nice prospects, replenish the farm on the offensive side, which is always good. Keeping the momentum moving, excuse me there, Terry, who do you have for your stud for this series?
My stud will be a guy who has missed all of the season leading up to this series and finally came back. That's Rob Refsnyder. Refsnyder fractured his pinky toe in spring training, and apparently it's not fully healed, but it's as good as it's going to get. And I was kind of skeptical because I'm like, if he's going to be playing right field at Fenway, that's a lot of ground. That's the biggest right field in the major. So it'll be interesting to see where he's put. We're going to get into Tristan Casas later on, but Refsnyder can play first base. So perhaps that will be the solution, you know, going forward. But instantly, though, you know, made an impact right away with a 2-run two-run shot off of Priester. I forget his first name. Rookie. It was the starting pitcher for Pittsburgh. And I think that home run is what led to Quinn Priester being taken out of the game. But it basically put game one out of reach. The Red Sox were up, I think, 5 or 6 to 1 at that point. And then today in the finale, he had a 2-run double that drove in both Rafaela and Duran. So instantly, you know, almost catching up to Tyler O'Neill in the runs batted in his first series. That's for Charlie. Doesn't have as big a muscles as O'Neill, but willing to play injured nonetheless. So Refsnyder had some key spots last year. He was hitting out of the 3-hole, and in no universe is Rob Refsnyder a 3-hole guy, but he is out of necessity on Sam Kennedy's Boston Red Sox. And I hope he doesn't get overused. I think Refsnyder is going to be the most productive if he's playing like 100 to 110 games a year. I think that optimizes him. If he's in there every day, I think the numbers are going to trickle down. You know, he'll probably be hitting 240. He's going to give you serviceable defense regardless. So the glove will be good throughout. And you know, this is a team that could use a good glove, regardless whether it's first base, right field. I don't know if he'll play left field even. That's why it's going to be interesting. But It was nice to see Ref Snyder come back, being a right-handed bat, making a huge impact.
Charlie?
Well, I mean, I literally feel that I wasn't the only one last year that said that if Rafe Snyder doesn't come back, then we're okay, because I just wasn't really content with the amount of production that we were getting out of him. And so far, 4 extra base hits, a home run, like you mentioned, Terry, like he's kind of doing great so far. I'm curious if maybe even 100 games is too many. What if we bring it down to, I don't know, 85 to 90 games, just so it's every other game, just get him in there. You know, he's already shown that he can, if he's broken, he's, you know, borderline useless and whatnot. And if the goal is to try to keep him for, you know, this year healthy, I think it's going to be minimizing the total playing time even more. He's in his early mid 30s now. He's 33. He just turned 33 rather last month. But I don't know, like I'm not expecting anything crazy out of his bat. And yeah, he could be a serviceable utility guy to an extent, but you can only be serviceable if you're available. And if that's not the case, then, you know, so we'll see what happens with him. I'm going to be keeping tabs on Rob for a little while, because if the extra base hits start to come a little bit more frequently, then you're going to see something that he was able to do, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, but last year extra base hits were not really his thing. And you saw his batting average drop from a little over 300 2 years ago to just under 250. So a lot of things kind of went the wrong direction for him. So hopefully he can go back to the 2022 form.
I think he ends up being the perfect type of spell guy, right? Somewhere between that 85 to 100, maybe 110 games. You know, we have a lot of young players on this team, which is good in the sense that we're not going to necessarily need to rely on Rob Ref Snyder for long-term fill-ins, right? You know, we're not going to have those 15, 30, 60-day DL type injuries to where, you know, we're moving them around first base, right field, left field, center field, you know, wherever we kind of need to fill a gap with some duct tape. You know, Charlie, Terry, you guys mentioned the stats, right? All those extra base hits in big moments, and not only hits in big moments in those games, boy, he couldn't have come back to this team at a better time. You know, we're down a couple of big bats, you know, we're down a couple of the right-handed bats as well. And for him to come in on the right side of the plate and have an immediate contribution, I think, you know, really just lifts this team more than it does in just the box score, right? You know, it's just showing that, hey, the guys that are coming back are going to be impact players, right? You know, Vaughn Grissom is close. Ref Snyder is already contributing. And, you know, he's willing to put it out there to grind, to put in those extra days, those extra efforts, even if he's not fully healthy, which I think just speaks a little bit to the culture of where this team is right now. And so, you know, I don't feel like we really heard, like, you know, Ref Snyder was out doing his, you know, rehab stints or whatever. So his return to the lineup kind of came out of the blue. And, you know, when I saw him batting in the Cleveland series for that one at bat, and then, you know, in the lineup here, I was like, whoa, he's back. Like, this is great. You know, these are kind of some of the reinforcements that we were holding and treading water for. So it would have been pretty deflating if he had come back right-handed bat and just kind of fell on his face. Not necessarily his fault, right? You know, it's major league pitching. You've kind of been on ice rehabbing for a couple of months. But to be able to come back and make an immediate impact, go for extra bases, you know, doubles the thing this team hasn't been hitting a lot of. I think, you know, it just kind of adds a little extra sweetening to the sauce. Gary?
So just some stats real quick. This was just before I get to 2023, last three seasons, his on base has been 364 or better. I think 2022, only 57 games played, he had a 384 on base. But, you know, they say on Nesson, he's a lefty killer, and he really is. I just pulled up his numbers from last year. 359 with a 411 on base against lefties, and that is in a very healthy sample size. 64 at-bats across 38 games. against righties, still very serviceable. 270 with a 365 on base. So you obviously you want to see him getting more starts against lefties. Today it was Perez, a lefty. I think Priester was actually a righty, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. But that could be one way. And after looking at the data a little more closely, I agree with Charlie. Probably, you know, 80-ish games is where he needs to be. And if you can get Tyler O'Neill back relatively healthy for at least 2 months, that could be a way, you know, how you can get him there. Go ahead, Charlie.
When we get Tyler O'Neill back healthy and crushing it, because it would be a real shame to see Tyler O'Neill go down the way that Adam Duvall went down when he was tearing the cover off the ball, got injured, came back, and was a shadow of his former self, and just never hit the same way after the injury. So I'm hoping that he comes back and, you know, takes that place right back where he was, because at one point he was leading Major League Baseball, then tied, then led Major League Baseball again with home runs. And I really, really feel that we cannot sleep on this guy, because it looks like by the end of the month, Tyler O'Neill will still be leading the Boston Red Sox with home runs, and he would have played a little more than half the games.
Well, in better news, in the pregame, I noticed he was taking batting practice, and he looked good. He looked normal, so I would think, I don't know where they're at in the 7 days. That was on Marathon Monday. So I guess he could be activated as early as this Monday or Tuesday. So perhaps you'll see him back immediately, but it doesn't look like it'll be an extended thing as far as the concussion goes for O'Neill.
Which is good. And, you know, the only thing that's scary about concussions, right, is it's non-linear. You know, he wasn't showing symptoms the first day, and then he ended up on the concussion, the disabled list for the concussion. But yeah, hope to see him back. You know, he was obviously tearing the cover off the ball, a huge cog in the lineup, had been kind of moved up to the top third, which was a great spot for him to be. But back to Rob Refsnyder, any other comments, any other tidbits that you guys want to chip in?
I'd like to see him hitting second in the order against lefties. Put him in front of Devers.
If we move Devers out of that two spot as well, which he sometimes scoots up to, right?
He has hit third at least a couple of times this year.
Yeah. All righty. Well, my stud for this series might be a little bit surprising to some. For me, it's got to be Alex Cora. This is a guy that I've bagged on, I would say, more than enough. I am admittedly and publicly not an Alex Cora fan. I don't like his demeanor. I don't like the way he interacts with the media. I don't like how he uses the high-performing players as examples. The list goes on of things that I don't like about Alex Cora. But what he did this weekend, I think, you know, I have to eat some crow. I have to give the man flowers when he deserves it. He took a roster that has been decimated by injuries. You know, some are temporary, like O'Neill, and, you know, some are already season-ending, like Story and Giolito. And he's gotten this team to do the things he said that he was going to get them to do in the offseason. They were going to be competitive. They were going to fight. And they were going to be ready for the situation. And, you know, yeah, the Pirates team might not have been as hot as they started at the beginning of the season, but you still got to go out there and you got to beat the team that's in front of you, right? These are 30 major league ball clubs, regardless if you have, you know, 26 major league talented level players on that roster. And I think you can look at the Red Sox roster, especially the lineup that they threw out there today, and say, hey, this is not a 26 man lineup that has major league level talent across it, top to bottom. And you went out there and you got a sweep. You know, I thought he handled the game situations very well. It was an even keel. He pushed Cutter for an extra inning, which helped the bullpen. You know, people like to say, oh, Alex Cora cost us a win there, or this is an Alex Cora masterclass, right? I feel like we talk about Alex Cora quite a bit. And this weekend, I think it was overwhelmingly positive. I think he was a deserving individual for a stud. And it's somebody that I got to give credit to, because I'm definitely loud with the disrespect, so I got to be equally loud, if not louder, with the respect. Charlie?
So I'm not, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not going to say I'm going to tear this apart, But what I am going to say is that I don't give Alex Cora credit for the starting pitching doing what they're doing. I don't think Alex Cora had a conversation with each of the starters and said, listen, this is what I think you should be doing. And all of a sudden they found, you know, all of a sudden they found Jesus and they're like pitching lights out. So there was a stat that was given out, and I don't remember the exact number, but it was the starting pitching ERA for the Boston Red Sox is like 1.68. or 1.78, so I apologize if the number's not precise. But that's insane that you have a 1.68 or 1.78 starting ERA. We used to hope that we could get quality starts. We're up to 7 so far on the season. Granted, we've had a couple bullpen games. The third game of this series was a bullpen game. Both of the starters in this series, in game 1, game 2, gave you 6 innings. I don't think that's Alex Cora. I think that's Andrew Bailey doing what he was brought in here to do and to truthfully fulfill the expectation that he said he was going to do. As far as handling certain, how do I put this diplomatically?
Obstacles.
Egos. Sorry, obstacles. I'd say egos, obstacles, sure.
Okay.
In check. I think he's done a pretty good job of that. So to your point, I will give him credit on that because that really will stop with the manager. If your manager has no control of the clubhouse where you have, you know, beer and chicken and stuff, then all bets are off and it's just going to be an absolute bleep show. But I can't say that this is all Alex Cora is doing. I think this certainly helps him. If this is someone who ends up wanting to become the highest paid manager in professional baseball, I think this is definitely going to help you. But I don't think it would be completely fair to give him full credit for it. Cody.
No, I'm not giving him credit for the ERA of the starting rotation. I'm more so saying that we have bagged Encore in the past for overmanaging, for inserting himself into game situations where we feel like it was not necessarily his place to be, right? And the situation I'm speaking of with Cutter Crawford was he went out for a mound visit. We were all thinking, oh, man, Cutter's about to get yanked here. They had a conversation. He left Cutter in. Cutter got out of that inning, and that was the 6th inning for us, and he got a little bit more out of the starting rotation. That I don't think is on anybody but Alex Cora and Cutter Crawford, right? That's not like he goes out there and is, hey man, we got to start throwing more curveballs or, you know, more cutters or whatever. If that's a conversation, you know, neither one of us can speak to that. But yeah, absolutely, Andrew Bailey deserves all the flowers. He, you know, is as a resident on the stud list. We just can't talk about him every week because then it would get pretty old and people might fast forward through it. But you know, in the sense that, as loud as we are when we feel like he's overmanaging, we also have to be equally as loud when he does what we consider to be the right things and the scenarios do pan out. So that was what I was essentially trying to allude to when I said, you know, getting an extra inning out of Cutter Crawford. But you're absolutely right. The starting ERA, which I think is sub 1.8 at this point in time, absolutely gives credit to Andrew Bailey. But Terry, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, the Colorado Rockies have the number one batting average right now in Major League Baseball. But that's super random. Getting back to Cora, he is, you know, his presence is good. You know, he doesn't have this look of defeat on his face. He's looking for solutions. He found some in Pittsburgh, and that's great. But we played a Pittsburgh team that lost 3 games in a row coming in. They looked very uninspired throughout the series. They were the ones committing the errors and base running, like, as terrible as I've seen the Red Sox at their worst. You know, guys trying to leg out doubles, getting gunned down. You know, it's impressive what we did without Devers, Dahlbeck, and O'Neill in there to sweep a series without those three. Casas did contribute in game 1. You could argue, well, they, you know, there was plenty of offense around him anyway. But so that's impressive. But, you know, we're about to face Cleveland again. We're going to have a Cubs series that's pretty tough. Then we've got the Giants. We haven't even played the division yet. So so many people on Red Sox Twitter are saying we're back, you know, and but just remember 3 short days ago, we lost 3 out of 4 to Cleveland and we're sitting at 10 and 10. So, you know, I think this series against Pittsburgh was a bit of a cupcake series, and we'll see, you know, how he does as things get tougher. Then we'll see, you know, what Core is about.
It's a totally fair point. I've been very loud with the criticisms. So, you know, when he essentially navigates a series flawless, regardless of the quality of opponent or not, you still have got to go out, execute, and win those games. Got to give him credit. Charlie, is there anything else you wanted to mention on Alex Cora?
The same thing where, you know, to your point with game management, I think there have been certain aspects that he's done really, really well. I also can't blame Alex Cora if players in the field are committing a boatload of errors. So the Boston Red Sox, who lead Major League Baseball with starting pitcher ERA and overall ERA, were leading the league in strikeouts, which is crazy. We're at 214, tied with the Dodgers. And they have one of the most lethal teams I think I've seen in the last, I don't know how many decades. We've also committed the most errors too. So we've had unforced issues and things like that we're going to have to get better with too. I don't blame Alex Cora for that either. So there's, you know, two sides to my criticism or my, I think, support level for the manager. So the season is still early. We're 13 and 10. I think we're going to finish better than 500 past April. So from a couple weeks ago, I think I was the only one who said we have a chance to finish based on some math breakdowns and whatnot. And the series that I thought we were going to win or lose, they haven't been right necessarily, but we're 3 games up right now. So I'm going to count that as a win.
It'll be an interesting one to follow for sure, because like you mentioned, right, I don't think a single series has gone the way we had predicted when we were looking at it, but we're still kind of where we were when we had that conversation. However, as we look forward, we also have to look backwards. So in this past series, Terry.
Honorable mentions. Before we get to the duds. Yeah, so Masataki Yoshida continues to, at least on the weekends, beat the allegations. 2-run homer on, that was on Saturday. 3-for-4 that game. 1-for-3 on Friday. Alex Cora sat him today. Monday's an off day, but that's fine. But good series for him. Hopefully we can just see some consistency. He had a terrible series against Cleveland. Was 0-for-6 one of those games. And then 0-for-4 the other, 2 strikeouts, 0-for-10. So if he can string together some hits, at least a few of them this week, then perhaps, you know, that will be a really good sign. Charlie, you're on mute.
Ooh, good call out. Thank you. So the two players that I wanted to call out were Brian Baio and Cutter Crawford, again, because they are continuing to be at the forefront. And here's the thing, guys. When your team is doing well in a specific position or area, in this case, starting pitching, notice one name who has not been mentioned in 2-3 weeks. I know this could be completely on me. What player has not been mentioned in Boston for the last 3 weeks because our starting pitching is going off?
Chase Anderson.
Chris Sale. Chris Sale's ERA in Atlanta right now would make our starting pitching ERA worse. He would actually statistically, even though he's been doing great, not be helping Boston. Cutter Crawford has 5 games pitched so far this year. He's allowed 2 earned runs in 27 1/3 innings, and he's only 1-0. So if that doesn't tell you right now that we really need the strength of the bats, like I don't know what would. But Baio, on the other side of that, has also had 5 starts. He's 3-1. So he's actually been able to have a more successful outcome and record, and he's allowed 11 total runs, 9 earned. His ERA is sitting just over 3. Cutter Crawford has a 0.66 ERA. I mean, it's going to be one of the best months that he's ever had, probably for the remainder of his career. Now, I don't anticipate these guys to continue having these 5 1/3, 6-inning games where they allow no earned runs or 1 earned run on 2 hits and strike out 5 or 6. I know that's not going to happen. And Cutter Crawford's going to have his bad start, and there could be 2 or 3 in a row. And we're just going to have to say, you know what? There are some highs, there are some lows, and that's it. But honorable mention, those two starters. Relievers, Kenley Jensen struck out the side in his only game of the series. Chris Slayton also just it reminds me of like Garrett Whitlock when he first came to Boston. He can pitch an inning, 2 innings, 2+, whatever, and he may allow a hit at the worst case. But otherwise, he's been electric in the bullpen.
Do you guys know how many pitches Bayo had? I fell asleep that game.
96, sorry.
96 over 6 innings?
All right. 96 pitch, yeah. All right. Yeah, but that's pretty much the standard. You throw 100 pitches in 6 innings, you did your job. Yeah. I think the rule of thumb is if you pitch 15, 16 pitches per inning, you've done okay. So if you've done 15 pitches at 6 innings, that's 90 pitches. If you were to do 16, add 6. So 96 pitches, he averaged 16 pitches per inning. Call it 4 batters or 3 batters an inning. He walked 2, allowed a hit. That's pretty damn good. And that's the average. You know there was probably one sub 12, sub 11 in there.
He struck out 7. It sounds like he was cruising again before I conked out. When I watched game, the first thing on there that I know I didn't see was a home run. We'll get to him shortly, actually. But just looking through the list, Winkowski is going to stay in the rotation next weekend. 3 1/3 from him today with just 1 earned run. Only struck out 1. He's usually a strikeout guy. So, and you know I'm a strikeout guy, so hopefully that number will kick up a little bit. But think that about covers it. I mean, if you want to throw Bobby Dalbec in there, we can do that. He got a hit. And then he drew a couple of walks too. So I think he's starting to, I don't know, he's starting to only be a borderline automatic out. And I just want to say,
I do feel bad for him.
I do.
I feel bad for him right now.
I said it in the pre-show. I want him gone. Like I would want my ex-girlfriend gone, but I hate seeing him suffer, you know? So
well, he's not getting any favors.
No,
like, these umpires are not helping him. They are screwing him on some of these calls. Like the pitches, they're close, but they're not that close to where it's an acceptable miss. And for a guy like these umpires don't owe players anything, but this is someone that's just not had good luck. And then on top of that, has not been able to, you know, just, I mean, usually you get 1 or 2 and the pitchers are getting every call against Bobby D. I actually do feel bad to that degree. You see him mouthing, you know, he's just, you can see him mouth the word F, you know, you can see it on, you know, live TV going back to the dugout. What do you say to him? Oh, good try. All good. Get him next time. No, like you got hosed. It sucks. It really does suck.
I had a bad flub about 5 minutes ago when I said the Rockies were leading MLB in average. Only at the catcher position. I forgot that. I forgot I switched it to that. So if you're going to attack me on Twitter, hopefully you heard the whole show because I goofed on that one. And I hold myself accountable. In honorable mentions, I just wanted to see where Red Sox catching ranked and where, let's see, 4th overall in average. What's the OPS? Because Wong has been going off. Not quite as impressive. We're 7th in OPS. Where are we in extra bases? Not even top 10. But it just feels like our catching tandem is amazing. I feel like you're getting, I mean, Reese was 1 for 7, but that one hit today, it was a blooper out into just near the foul line in very shallow left field. It got two runs in. I mean, that dude is super clutch when there's base runners on. Doesn't matter how many outs. And that's opposite field. He's a lefty. So if he's going to left field, he's going to oppo. And Connor Wong had a relatively quiet series, but he's been getting it done. His average is in the mid 300s, which is a continuation of spring training. And I mean, I can't wait for Kyle Teal, but you know, this situation right here allows for, you know, him to be brought up at a good pace. We no need to rush him. And can't say enough about our catching situation.
And it's, you know, it's refreshing to see too, right? Because catcher is usually a offensive pit for most teams. So to be able to get any sort of production, let alone above average production, I think is always very welcome. But as welcome as offensive production is, there is some lack of offensive production, which usually ends the guys up on the dud list. So we'll kick it over to Charlie for his dud for the weekend.
Yeah, this is just based on stats and the fact that I just, we're talking so much about Willy Abreu, about how that trade really benefited us. And, you know, it took a little time and we're hoping to get just one of those two guys to hit. If one of them hits, it's great. But unfortunately, Emmanuel Valdez has not been hitting the way that we wanted. And unfortunately just had a really rough series, just 1-for-11. Did not have a successful time at the plate. Did have a couple RBIs in the first game, but there's just, I'm not like, it's not like looking at Bobby Dalbec and saying, all right, there's a pretty good chance he's going to strike out. He struck out 16 times in 26 at-bats. That's tough. I'm not impressed by the at-bats that I'm seeing for Valdez. And you know, you want to see something exciting happen from these guys that are 25. You want to see development. You want to see growth. I'm just seeing possibly him peaking, and this may be it. I just don't see anything special trending in that direction for him, and it sucks because you want him to do super, super well. And, you know, some players really start off by doing damage against teams that are not that good or teams that are struggling kind of in a rut. Pittsburgh, admittedly so, was one of the best teams in the National League to start off the season. They've had a bit of a rut since then. They've lost, what, six straight now? Is it two straight series? Yeah, not good. So you're 2-for-11 against a team that's scuffling. That doesn't really tell me that you're more deserving of getting more time at the dish. You drew one walk, you struck out three times. So the strikeout numbers aren't alarming, but overall, I'm not looking at you as someone that I can count on not a consistent basis, even a semi-regular basis to do damage. And that stinks. Like, I want him to do well too. We obviously want this team to succeed, but you know, based on stats, I mean, his OBP right now for the year is down to 200. It's 203, and it's just not getting the job done. So for me, Valdez.
Terry?
He showed flashes last year, and I thought maybe we have something in the kid. The defense wasn't there, so that was a concern either way, but he's really been a net negative to the team. He's had a couple of, you know, two run homers, but that just doesn't get it done. And it just appears more and more as the season, you know, gets further underway, that this guy is just not a Major League Baseball player. You know, he looks like he could be a career AAA type guy. Perhaps, you know, he could shine in another league, whether it's in the Caribbean or perhaps, you know, across the Pacific. But I don't think he has a future here in Major League Baseball.
He's kind of like Pop Rocks, right? You know, largely mediocre, but every now and again you get a little bit of sizzle. You get a big pop here and there that kind of keeps you excited or keeps you enticed. You know, he's got a pretty looking swing, in my opinion, and when he hits the ball, it goes a mile. But yeah, like you guys mentioned, the consistency is a real factor. And, you know, if you're not going to be able to consistently produce, whether it be offensively or defensively, it kind of puts a team in a tough position. Now, credit to him, he's been available. He's been in the lineup as often as we could put him in there. But, you know, I'm just not seeing it as well with you guys. It's just, you know, a real bummer, right? Because you always want to see as many people make it in the major leagues. Like, you know, this is a dream that so many of us have had. And, you know, he has the opportunity to live out that dream. It's just, you know, it's a reason it's such a sacred fraternity of individuals that it can say they've played Major League Baseball at the professional level. But, you know, hopefully he can find something, maybe make a tweak, maybe, you know, talk to Andrew Bailey. He seems to be the tonic for everybody's troubles. And, you know, we can find something or figure something out. Terry, who is your dud for the weekend?
Mine is going to be Tyler Heinemann. That guy. I'd never heard of him 48 hours ago. And unfortunately, he got called up when Tristan Casas left the game due to, I don't know, they said rib strain. It sounds like it's more commonly known as an intercostal strain, but I guess more information will come out on Monday or Tuesday. He's going to have testing done on Monday, I guess. But he was 0 for 1 and then was promptly taken out, and then Reese McGuire came in. And I think it was that very at-bat that McGuire drove in too. So it was a key spot and a good move by Cora to take him out after just one at-bat. But the reason he's my dud is I'm just highlighting the lack of depth we seem to have at first base. I mean, you could put Bobby there, but I really think Bobby's better off at third, you know, defensively. Like, he plays that position very well. He's an above average third baseman. So for as long as Devers is out, and Devers isn't on the injured list as far as I know, he's not, right? Right. I'm guessing he could be back as early as Tuesday, and it's extremely encouraging that Devers isn't on it, because they would have put him on it by now just to make a roster move. So perhaps Bobby will go to first. Although, wouldn't it be fun to watch Devers do it?
You know, I don't think so.
No, okay. I'm
okay with another experiment. We've tested too many things out. I don't like it.
We're three games above 500, so, you know, now's not the time to mess around. But I wouldn't mind seeing it in August, though, just to see, you know. But anyway, so it looks like Heinemann is only going to be up here for a cup of coffee. He has been in the majors off and on for a little while. I wasn't aware of that. I'm guessing he was mostly a backup catcher, but he debuted with the Miami Marlins in 2019 at age 28, so late bloomer. But typically he's got a batting average in the low 200s with an on base in the upper 200s, so not very serviceable, you know, if you desperately need a backup. I think he's been a catcher actually for most of that, but trying to confirm that. I can't do it on Baseball Reference. But yeah, I mean, if you had a guy like Connor Wong, you know, he needs every fourth day off. So that would be a time to use a guy like Heinemann. But there's just no real reason to keep him once Devers comes back. Your catching position, as I've highlighted, is very good. And he's just going to go back to the minors. He's a warm body, basically. And but the bad news is you're probably going to be getting a lot of Bobby D at first, unless this injury is, you know, the timetable is quicker than most of us think. But based on Alex Cora's comments, it looks like he's going to be out for quite a while. A couple months, maybe.
There's not much to add about Tyler Heineman. He had one career home run in his first 11 at-bats and has zero in his last 237. There's nothing unique about this guy. He's 32 years old. I mean, maybe he can make it as a coach after baseball is over, but there's no place for him on this team. And he would be on exactly zero other teams in Major League Baseball right now. So yeah, definitely a warm body. Will definitely be replaced. We don't need him.
I think it's just a representation of exactly how injury prone this team has been so far. We might lead the major league in the statistic of most games missed due to injury. We've got two or three guys already on the season ending injury list. And, you know, it's unfortunate, right? You look at the roster construction. We've got quite a few players that, you know, can kind of play all over the infield, but the problem is they were, you know, supposed to be fill gaps, you know, if Story's out for a game or, you know, Calsis needed a breather or we needed an outfield, you know, kind of respite. They could kind of pop in for one game here, one game there, you know, the Ref Snyder types of sorts. But, you know, we're kind of already using all of those resources, and that's how you find your way to this individual. But, you know, it is what it is. You got to go through it because you can't really forfeit a game. If you do, I think the Red Sox Nation Twitter might actually burn down. But anything else that you two gentlemen wanted to add in regards to that? Yep, Terry?
I'm just wondering if we can make a move here to possibly acquire someone. It's not going to be a sexy move, but I mean, you could call back CJ Krohn, who I don't believe is with another team. A guy I'd love to get that we just faced is Rowdy Tellez, but Pittsburgh is still, they're not out of it yet. I mean, they're probably still looking at 2024 as if they could contend. Another guy, maybe you could pry him out of the national system. I don't love it, but Joey Gallo. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but if Costas is going to miss 2 months, I can't deal with 2 months of Bobby Dalbec is what I'm getting at. So, you know, another guy, Josh Bell. I don't know how Miami's doing.
Tellez just stays murdering the Red Sox. And, you know, on the first at-bat of the first game, he grounded out to Rafael. Well, he sort of grounded out. And I was like, oh, man, we dodged one, right? It was just a ground out to short. And it turned out to not be that. But, you know, Terry being a proponent of bringing in another left-handed bat, I think is certainly interesting.
Oh, is he a lefty? My bad.
He is a lefty.
I was wondering that.
I want no part of Rowdy Tellez at all. I mean, the only beauty of having him is that you don't have to face him. He's absolutely baptized Boston. I think they mentioned today that in his limited sample size against the Red Sox, he's homered more against the Boston Red Sox than any other team. I think he has like 11 career home runs or 12 career home runs, something like that. I forget the number that they've said today.
It is nuts, right? Because like he went off against us originally in Toronto and then he went to Milwaukee. And we're like, oh, well, surely this won't happen again. And like you said, he just baptized this again in a different uniform. Yeah, and I was like,
it's the weirdest thing. It's the weirdest thing. Like his slash against our team has always just been, he's killed us. I'm trying to pull up his numbers against Boston specifically, against the Boston Red Sox. Excuse me. 14 home runs, 29 RBIs in 40 games. He has 14 home runs in 140 plate appearances. Literally, once every 10 at-bats, home run.
If you guys got some time, too, he gets some pretty funny post-game interviews. I think he, like, closed out a blowout as a pitcher, and he just went in it as if he was, like, Joe Nathan or Mariano, and he's like, you know, they just call on the big arms to get the clutch outs. You got to go out there and perform and do what you got to do. It was pretty entertaining. Gary, you wanted to mention something?
Yeah, I mentioned Josh Bell, but looking at his contract, he's getting 16 and a half a year, so hard pass.
How do you say
there.
No? How do you say no to that one? Yeah, that's just not happening.
Yeah, the Red Sox aren't taking on that money. That was a stupid contract anyway.
I don't even think the Red Sox, even if it was like $4 million, would take that contract. I don't think there's, I don't know.
Probably not.
I mean, you know, like, to be honest, like, I hear what you're saying. Like, I like the thinking outside the box, but
CJ Cron is probably more realistically your best
bet.
Yeah.
That's an interesting solution as well. Well, rounding out the last dud for the evening is Rafaela. He went 2 for 12 for the weekend. Did have a home run, a couple of RBIs, also, you know, a couple of Ks. Not going to super bag on a guy for a performance and a sweep. You know, he's kind of moved around the diamond a bunch. I think this is more just kind of a bummer that he hasn't been able to keep up what he was doing in spring training and the start of the season, right? He got that contract. We were all jazzed about it. I think all of us across the war room. We're really excited to see this front office, you know, investing guys in the future. That 8-year contract was great. He was hot at the time, playing great center field. But we moved him to short out of necessity. And so hopefully, you know, as he gets more games under his belt, he, you know, kind of relaxes a little bit, right? That was kind of the big knock against him when we had seen him in previous stints, was he was always kind of rushing and kind of pressing. And everybody was really excited to see him kind of slow down, take a beat, not feel like the moment was too big in spring training at the beginning of the season. And we're starting to see that kind of bubble up, that energy, you know, kind of overtake him a little bit at short. You know, that Rowdy Tellez grounder is another play that he should have made handily, but it looked like he kind of rushed a bit and ended up bobbling it. So hopefully he can find some consistency, find his stride at shortstop, and can kind of produce in a similar fashion as he was at center. Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely really excited because it finally looked like the Red Sox put their big boy pants on and sat at the adult table and started actually shelling out money for players that we're hoping can actually work out, because the Red Sox have been unfortunately on the wrong end of offering deals. We're offering deals. We're lowballing players. Players are walking, and you know, perennial talent players like Mookie Betts are now playing in, you know, Dodger Blue. They finally opened up the pocketbook and gave a contract to a player that had minutes of playing time in reality to some of the other guys that they could be signing, like Tristan Casas. You know, Brian Baio got signed. But the thing about him is, you know, we did see the home run. Outside of that home run, he's only had 2 extra base hits. And since the 8th of April, he's only had 1. He had a double. That's it. The strikeout numbers aren't great. They're not the worst. They're like 25%, give or take. So I still think he's going to be coming to, you know, coming into himself. You know, he's still only 23 years old. So I'd like to give it another year before we really start to you know, harp and harness the negativity on this guy. So I'm really hoping that, you know, the struggle is there right now. I don't know what message you would send to your team and to Sadon and any player who's looking to get signed. If you sign a multi-million dollar deal, mega contract for someone that doesn't have a lot of service time, and then you send them down to AAA. So I don't know if that would be a hypothetical smart move, but it might be a good move for him just so that he can kind of figure it out. Because I mean, going 2 for 12, 1 for 12 with a couple hits. Yeah. One might be a home run. That's not a consistent basis. You know, you have 3 extra base hits so far this year. It's not going to get it done. So what can we do to make the adjustments? Is it something that, you know, are we spending enough time in the box? Are we, you know, studying at bats? Are we looking at pitchers? What are we doing with him? Like, what are we doing with him that we could be doing to further his career and trajectory in a positive manner? Because right now it's not going up, period. I don't know if I'd say it's going down. It's stagnant. It's just, there's nothing happening. So I'm hoping that, you know, we can right the ship with him, and, you know, hopefully it doesn't mean sending him down to AAA.
Terry?
Rafaela was fortunate that the rest of the offense kind of handled business and put up a bunch of runs. I mean, collectively, the Red Sox scored 18 runs. So very productive series for the offense as a whole. As we get to face these tougher lineups, he's going to hopefully have to figure it out here. And the one glimmer of hope I did notice is he was far more patient in the batter's box. He wasn't antsy. You know, he wasn't trying to do too much. He was very relaxed, very patient, kind of picked his spots and wasn't chasing. I really noticed a difference in the plate discipline, and that's an important step to figuring it out. So as we get into this Cleveland series, which will only be a 3-game set, they played 4 games last week. We'll see if he can put some balls in play. Perhaps we'll see the power a little bit more. I mean, he crushed that one homer, like off the bat, you knew it was gone. So a little bit encouraged, but still he played all 3 games this weekend, only 2 hits. So we'll see what happens. Only 2 strikeouts though as well. So
it does kind of remind you of Verdugo. If he was kind of slumping, you wouldn't see the strikeout numbers be a major point of issue. You know, Verdugo, when we had him over the past couple of years, was pretty good with not striking out. So if Zidane can keep that statistic down as far as striking out is concerned, I think that will also continue to assist him when it comes to, you know, playing better and just kind of figuring it out. Because, you know, Zidane was playing multiple positions. I think it'll help him too with his development if we're just going to keep him at one. Don't have him playing multiple spots, because you're kind of messing with him. Also, I think that if he can, you know, consistently see more at bats, that might help him. So that does require having him bat higher up in the lineup. But, you know, it then becomes the question of, is it worth it? Because, you know, the team that we just faced, the Pittsburgh Pirates, have O'Neill Cruz, who I love. I love O'Neill Cruz. I think he's spectacular. But he slumped and they dropped him down to 8th in the lineup until he figured it out. And that is the face of their franchise for the foreseeable future. Now that Andrew McCutchen, although he's back, you know, he's kind of like the old guy in the group. So it may be one of those things. You know, do you want to, you run the risk of getting him more at bats by having him bat higher up in the lineup. But if he starts slumping, you know, the confidence goes down. Then, you know, you bump him down to, you know, maybe what the Pirates did. You bump him 7th and 8th. Terry, you brought up a really, really good point. You outscored your opponents 18-4. You're 2-for-12 series, unrecognizable. If we lose this series, he's one of the people we're pointing to. So it's all about the perspective of, like, what's going on and what ended up happening. We reap the benefits of sweeping Pittsburgh here. So it doesn't look as bad on paper.
You mentioned Derek. Alex Verdugo had a big game today for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Bases loaded. He drove in 2 of those base runners. And if you look at his stats, hitting .233, not that spectacular. But since April 9th, he's batting .306 and he scored 8 runs. So I feel like he was a slow starter the past couple of years as well. And then usually by the end of April, he's cranking. And I don't have his strikeout numbers up in front of me, but last I checked, he was basically on par, not striking out much in New York. So we'll see. Hopefully he gets his act together. I was always a Verdugo apologist, and I hope, you know, he kind of learned his lesson with the off-the-field stuff here in Boston, you know, showing up late and just not having a ton of discipline, you know, in his pregame prep. So we'll see.
We'll see indeed. And, you know, when it comes to Rafaela, we'll take any steps in the positive direction, even if they are baby steps, right? But Terry, who do we have for the dishonorable mentions for this weekend?
Well, Reyes was 1-for-7. Not that impressive. Not really. I mean, pitching was pretty good all around. Weissert doesn't seem to ever pitch a full inning anymore. So we'll, I don't know, keep tabs on that. But not a lot to complain about.
Not a lot to complain about indeed. Was there anything else you two gentlemen wanted to add to this episode? Alrighty, we will wrap it there. Thank you everybody for joining us for another episode. Have a great day and take care.